Well, hello there. Oh, I've got lots of letters for Santa today. And every year, they're the same. Some ask for toys, but a lot ask questions.
A yo-yo?
If you wish to give me a present?
I'd like to be a dentist.
Here's hoping he's hippity-hopping your way. So straighten your bonnets and shine up all your shoes. And hurry, there's no time to lose. The Easter Bunny is coming to town today. He's riding an engine instead of a sleigh. Don't blink for even a second or he'll be gone. He puffs in at quarter to dawn. He'll be filling Easter baskets. He'll be rolling eggs like mad. Green in everything that's winter clad.
The Easter Bunny is welcome to town today. Christmas. Our Easter edition. Today we're going to be covering the Easter Bunny's coming to town. Dying to really get into it. I'm joined by Ann and Christian. We have Gen X. We have Lost Gen. We do not have Gen Y. Unfortunately, we did get some notes from Evan. By the way, hope everyone has been dealing with this post-Christmas crises that we have every year. As I say, you know, if Christmas is your heroine, Easter is your subutext. So we are getting a little subutext, and then listen, we get this little blast. Hopefully it takes us to the summer. By August, those Christmas trees will be out in Lowe's and we're fine. We're right back to it. That being said, I want to say hello to Ann Sleeman, and happy Easter to you, Ann.
Happy Easter to you, Kev. Yeah, it's great to be back with the Christmas specials we love. And we're kind of out of that weird, dark time between Christmas and now. Little tease with the Oscars is always fun, but no real holidays. So I'm so happy that we're getting together to cover this one today. It's going to be great.
Now, Anne, did you give up anything for Lent? Do you still follow the, you know, the holy...
See how you have to go there. See how you have to do that. I think I followed my dad's standard. My dad, who's 88, and I think for 70 or so years, he's given up lima beans every year. So sure, I gave up lima beans, like
which
my dad.
Which is a great tie-in, because in Easter Bunny is coming to town, little, you know, Bruce the Frail, that's all they eat is beans. So very, very nice tie-in.
Apropos, dare I say.
So then you could, then dad and you can have all the jelly beans you want on Easter Sunday. Christian, over to you, Christian. How you and the kids, how have you been dealing with the, you know, post-holiday blues, so to speak?
Well, yeah, I think the subutex really kicks in the summer. Right now I'm on the methadone treatment, and Easter is definitely going to help. You know, there's the blip that St. Patrick's Day. I mean, that's really just a few hours.
It's something.
Yeah, it's something. But Easter is big. It's big with my kids. We've been very busy the last few weeks. We had to squeeze in time to make sure we get the picture with Easter Bunny. And to Anne's dad's credit, that's basically the same thing I do. I neither smoke nor drink coffee. So every year for Lent, I say I'm giving up cigarettes and coffee.
I love it.
And I'm undefeated.
And then, you know, by the way, we like to keep these holidays, here are the Christmas specials we love podcasts. We like to generally keep it pagan and keep it about the important things, which is presents and candy.
And likes,
always about likes. We're all about being popular. So Christian, your kids are how old now? 3 and 5? So
Felix is 8 and Lucy is 6. So we're in prime Easter Bunny company territory. And, you know, I don't know how much they buy into the whole thing, but as with anything.
That was my question. Do they buy in?
I think that Felix definitely has figured out that there's not a giant rabbit. The problem will be like stuff that it's like, why is the Easter Bunny wearing socks? I'm like, okay, yeah, it's a great point, you know. But he also gets it in the sense of like, I don't want the the train to pull into Kidville without any gifts for me. So he's like, he knows to be like, yeah, I'm just going to go with the flow here. And we are going to see the Easter Bunny. We get a picture with the Easter Bunny every year, except for 2020. We could not, but every year since then and before then. So they're very excited because, you know, getting to see the Easter Bunny. Lucy has a question for the Easter Bunny this year. We're reading a storybook. It's called How to Catch an Easter Bunny. And in it, the Easter Bunny says he's been delivering presents since, I think he says 1652. Maybe 1852. Anyway, she's like, I'm going to ask the Easter Bunny on Wednesday if he's been delivering presents. So I'm going to give him a very pronounced, you know, behind her.
Wow.
Yeah, one of those.
Oh, some poor, yeah. Some poor local rhino now has to be put on the spot to answer that question. Oh, that's the 70s Easter Bunny. Here's the thing. I have seen, and I've talked to my friend Steve the Steamer about this, I have seen a drastic decline in the belief in the Easter Bunny. And in fact, I went and did some due diligence, and the estimate is 30 to 40% less of kids believe in the Easter Bunny. Because I was ride or die for Easter Bunny. I was he was on speed dial. You first went to Santa, then after Santa wasn't there for you, you cried to the Easter Bunny. Tooth Fairy, you know, they, in a pinch, maybe. But, and were you a believer in Easter Bunny?
I was totally a believer until, okay, I've got a little bit of a sad story here in the little Ann Sleeman world. On the bus in kindergarten, I won't name names, one of my best friends told me, I was five, that Santa and the Easter Bunny were my parents. So it was tough. So I had an older brother, and I had to fake it to make it with my older brother, who believed probably later than he should, but back in the day. And he believed, I think, until fourth grade, and I had to just go along with it. But I was in the know, sadly.
Yeah, but Aaron, I'm surprised that you weren't a nice brainwashed Catholic like me, because I had friends try that on me. But I was like, no, you're wrong. You're flat out wrong.
That was my take back to her on the bus. But then I got home. And so when we were in trouble as little kids, we had to go, or even now, I guess, into my parents' living room, AKA the Pala. And I had my mom and dad, I said, I need to see you guys in the living room.
Ooh.
So I sat them down and we all cried. And I got it out of them because I was like, you need to tell me the truth.
Even in kindergarten.
It was a tough day. And you know, it's funny. I'm friends with that person on Facebook, and she's still a miserable individual.
Just, you know, it really
never got married. Like,
it's because there's no magic inside of her. So yeah, no one's going to find that attractive and want to spend their life with it. Yeah.
It's interesting how we are baked at a very, you know, they say between 3 and 6. And unless you do a lot of work on yourself, that's kind of who you are. Christian, okay, for you, were you all in on Easter Bunny? You're the generation behind us. So were you?
Yeah. No, I was definitely in. And I think I held on to Santa a little bit longer. The Easter Bunny, there's just too many holes in the story, you know, and it's a giant rabbit. It's not a person, you know. And it's like seeing the Easter Bunny at the mall actually doesn't help. Seeing Santa might calm some concerns, especially if you're lucky enough and it's the same Santa you saw the year before. You're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Right.
But the Easter Bunny is definitely tougher. Yeah, I my wife talks about how she never really believed in the Easter Bunny. She just couldn't buy into it. Yeah, she's younger than me. Yeah, she's seven years younger than I am. I know the Easter Bunny needs better PR, Kevin.
Well, no, listen to me on this. Here's the hot take for this particular episode. I'm not going to blame Rankin Bass for the decline of the Easter Bunny. However, they had the potential to avert that, to avert the decline with this special. And because it failed, it was, other than the theme song, which is actually pretty good. It's to me, it was the highlights, the only good part of this special. And I can see where they tried on this, and we'll get into it. But I feel like had this been done like Santa Claus is Coming to Town, I think that it would have stayed, you know, there would have been more repeats. I mean, this disappeared from TV by the early 80s. You know, I mean, I remember it early 80s. I think by 81, it was gone.
I definitely remember some images of it, and I'm like, I think I've seen this, but I was born in 76, so I don't really remember it the way I do the Christmas specials. And you're right, like, this starts really strong. It's basically the La La Land of Rankin-Bass specials, where like the open is so great and you're so excited, and then after 10 minutes you're like, what the hell am I watching?
Wait, right. Is it your take on La La Land, Christian?
Correct.
Mine too. I was just like, wait, I'm kind of bored. Sorry, I know I'm supposed to be buying into this.
But to be fair, the open's great.
Yes,
in La La Land. Yeah. And this might be the first time that this special has been compared to La La Land, but you made me think of it. Yeah.
And you're right. And there was so much hype, and then you started to watch, and you're like, "Am I the only person who doesn't really like this? But I'm gonna stick it out because I keep wanting more, and I know there's gonna be something more." And back in the day, it's like, well, it's the only special on, so I'm going to watch it because I get the full hour of TV. But yeah, it is the La La Land. I never thought of that, but it's so true. And I can't believe the three of us are not fans of that because everyone else I know is so in.
I'm going to be honest. I actually never finished La La Land.
Me neither.
I got like an hour into it. My wife had an Academy screener, and then it, you know, we thought it won the Oscar, and I'm like, oh, I have to finish it. And then 30 seconds later, I realized it didn't. I'm like, oh, thank God.
So, we're out.
Yeah. You know, back when I used to have to go to a ton of movies because Maria, my wife, used to have to go to those junkets and screeners, and it was, a lot of them were fun, but then I just got really good at, right around the beginning of Act Two, closing my eyes and going to sleep, coming right back midway through Act Three, and that was it. That's all I needed. It was beautiful. I really mastered. Anyway, all right, we are getting off topic.
We are digressing.
Yeah, we definitely are.
Easter Bunny is coming to town, so I'm sure this is going to be interesting because I bet you a lot of people tuning in to this episode of Christmas Specials We Love might be tuning in because you're a little curious, but many of you probably haven't seen the special. So I'll just try to make it so I guess you don't have to. You know, it's basically the way Santa Claus is Coming to Town was the origin of Santa Claus by Rankin-Bass and Claymation. This is the origin of the Easter Bunny via Claymation. This was done in 1977, and, you know, Santa Claus Coming to Town was 70 or 71. There was an explosion of success with Rankin and Bass, and I have to think that they probably were very overwhelmed. And who knows, maybe just the creativity, just they're a little older, whatever. It just was gone. I get the sentiment where they were, what they were trying to do here. And I think writing-wise, what's sad is all could be fixed. You could have really told the story of the origin of the Easter Bunny in a way that they did it in Santa Claus Coming to Town that made you say, oh, yeah, wow, I believe, I get it. But we'll go over a lot of the holes where it just felt a little lazy and rushed.
The framing device that works at times is the kids actually talking to Fred Astaire and being like, well, what about this? It's like, all right, we're going to get to it. You know, and it's like having legitimate questions that a kid might have. And there's times where it works. There's other times where it's like, and that's where the tradition of rolling an egg down a hill came from. I'm like, who rolls an egg down a hill? I've never seen that other than in the special. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't there. We would need our expert, Rick Goldschmidt, the world's leading Rankin and Bass expert. Like, he's not said much about this special, which I find peculiar.
I feel like even in 77, they had NDAs, Kev.
So maybe he's not what it was.
Yeah.
By the way, shout out to our world leading expert. I feel like we did a little background on Easter candy. I feel like, Anne, you know, we talked about being the world leading expert of milk duds.
Yes, you are.
I want to be a little digression here that, for those people who haven't seen Easter Bunny's Coming to Town and you want to be slightly entertained, hopefully this will entertain you. But I was meeting randomly with a person who's in the billionaire category. And
with a B.
And you know what connected us?
Milk duds.
Our mutual love of milk duds.
Beautiful.
The wife was like, oh God. She like rolled her eyes and was like, I know my husband. And then Maria's like, well, I know my husband. In other words, two losers.
Two dud fluencers, Kev.
Thank you, Anne. I wish you were there.
I would have been. I would have deemed billionaire dude Doug.
No, I think Doug Fluencer too. I said, well, here's the thing. We can be, you know, we can either be co-leading or we could be Siskel and Ebert, or we could be, it could be controversial where I claim on it. But the bottom line was this. He had the billionaire brain where he's like, did you hear that they're discontinuing it? And I said, wait a second. I said, I have noticed. I'm seeing it less and less in movie theaters. He's like, yeah, they're cutting back. But then he had the billionaire brain. He's like, you know, we could buy it. And the wife was like, oh, gee. Like, she just, I guess because he's super successful, but then he's bought a lot of harebrained businesses because he.
I already love this guy.
That's what I'm saying. I loved him. I adored him. I was just like, okay. Then I went to, okay, listen, we can go to Hershey. And I said, I have to find the chief marketing officer or Hershey. Like, maybe they won't give up the IP, the intellectual property. I said, but maybe we could do it in partnership. I said, but the problem is you can't go in, because it's like when Disney started buying land in Florida, he had to send other people to buy.
Yes. Because
if it was Disney, they would have overcharged him. So this discussion went pretty deep.
And I like it.
And I'm all based on Christmas specials we love, where Rick Goldschmidt got to proclaim himself to be the world leading Rankin and Bass expert. And I was like, well, I want to be an expert in something. I chose Milk Duds and chose throw blankets.
Yeah, holiday throw blankets.
Holiday throw blankets, neat. Total niche.
And I needed more of a niche.
Did you ever take one?
No, I know Evan had Captain Crunch.
We assigned Evan. We gave him Captain Crunch. He's probably not even had Captain Crunch.
I think I'm a bit of an authority on the to keep it to Halloween time, the monster cereals, you know, because it wasn't just Count Chocula, Boo Berry, and Frankenberry.
Okay, go ahead. No, I know these as well. I can't say I'm an expert. I'm saying I'm a dabbler in that.
Yeah.
I'm
more of a teacher. You dabble. Okay.
Yeah, right. So, okay. So can you tell me the monster cereals, sir?
So the other one was Fruit Brute, which wasn't around.
That's an audience that doesn't know. You've got startup. You've got Count Chocula.
Yeah.
You've got Frankenberry.
Yeah. And those are like year round kind of everywhere. Yeah.
Not everyone, our fans are not all experts. You have to edify them. Then you've got Blueberry.
Blueberry. Yeah.
But then what separates you from all of us is Fruit Brute.
That does.
That was a short stint. He was a werewolf, right? Wasn't he kind of?
Yeah. He's basically a werewolf. And of course, the other one's Yummy Mummy.
Wow.
Proving you are the world leading expert.
They brought Fruit Brute and Yummy Mummy back sort of like just at Targets, like just as seasonal, and kind of Blueberry sort of in that in between. But in recent years, they did. I'm looking for the name of it. It's the Monster Mix or something, where it's a box with just all the crap mixed together, like all five of them just
chocolate and blueberry.
Yeah,
and
it's perfect.
Fruit, whatever.
It's a blissful Saturday morning in October.
Getting into breakfast cereals, and I really wish Evan were here because he is the Captain Crunch expert, but I was told he's a crunchologist. I was told that they actually sell on Amazon the separate Lucky Charms marshmallows.
Ooh. Wow.
That you can add to your cereal.
So you can buy all of the green clovers?
I don't know about that, but you can get the marshmallows rather than just the cereal.
The marshmallows, just about. Yeah, well, Evan would talk about the Captain Crunch cereal that was just called Oops All Berries. It didn't have the little like corn pieces.
When was that? Because I would
like recently. I think it's still available.
At
a large supermarket, you can get an Oops All Berries.
Okay,
from Crunch Berry.
So I became the master of removing the Captain Crunch. And so then you only had the Crunch Berries.
At the end. Always.
There's an all Crunch Berry cereal.
Yeah, oops all berries. Yeah. I don't know if
you're gonna dabble in that also.
I might have to.
I mean, listen, you see, Christian could.
I think you could be an apprentice.
Adjacent.
You can get
a box from Target right now for $3.99. Oops, all berries. Okay. So, yeah.
I would be what is considered a local authority.
There you go.
Not world leading, local authority. Okay,
we digress.
Let's get into this. Easter Bunny is coming to town. The release date, April 6, 1977. This is Rankin and Bass's 23rd special. And the third of Rankin and Bass Easter specials, the first being Here Comes Peter Cottontail, which maybe we'll do next year, And the second being the first Easter Rabbit, which was done in 76. I remember Here Comes Peter Cottontail. I don't think I remember the first Easter Rabbit.
The first Easter Rabbit, I think, was the one that was basically the story of the Velveteen Rabbit. Mm. Remember that got the rabbit that got made fun of because it wasn't alive by the other stuffed animals. And then the kid got sick, loved it, and then it became real.
Got it. And I remember Here Comes Peter Cottontail.
With Iron Tail.
Yes. Pretty you remember cool. that one, Ann?
Oh, yeah. He was kind of he was a good villain, I thought.
Let's put a pin in that.
Let's put a pin in it.
Okay, because this may next year we'll be back with
I think
Here Comes Peter Cottontail. But okay, this one's written by our friend Romeo Muller, who had delivered up till now. Theme music was by Maury Laws, who again had delivered
up till now.
50-minute runtime, and it stars Fred Astaire. Now he's SD Kluger. Well, now this is cool for back then. You know, back then, today we honor having characters go throughout the Marvel universe sequels, right? Today it is a given. However, back then it wasn't. They didn't honor that as much. I think it's really cool that SD Kluger was recycled from 1970s Santa Claus Is Coming to Town.
Yeah, I never thought of that, Kev. It's
very rare back then that they did that. So I thought that that was pretty cool of Rankin and Bass to do. And we went over Fred Astaire deep when we did the Santa. If you want to look in our library over Santa Claus Coming to Town, we went pretty deep with him and his amazing career. A lot of people think that this was his last production. It wasn't. It was Ghost Stories, which is actually a pretty good movie that he made 4 years later. That was his last thing. Here's the interesting thing about him. His wife, Robin Smith, who was 45 years his junior and a famous jockey, actually, he dies in her arms, which is how he said he wanted to go. And I guess Ginger Rogers was there on his deathbed too, which I didn't know, which I thought was cool, his old dance partner. But they had greenlit a biopic about him starring Tom Holland back in 2021. Haven't heard anything about it since.
But that'd be amazing.
Yeah. Here's an interesting twist I wanted to bring up is that he stipulated in his will, he never wanted his image used for anything.
Oh.
So, you know, and who knows, like it probably could be honored even with AI, but he was like, I never want my image out there. So back in the day when Ginger Rogers got her Kennedy Center honors, they wanted to use his image in dancing and no, couldn't do it. And the wife who kind of had the keys, it still does, was like, no. And then you cut to that Dirt Devil commercial. Do you remember where he was vacuuming on the ceiling?
No.
She agreed, probably because of money. I mean, I hate to say it, but she actually agreed to lift the whatever band that he had on his image being used. Yeah, it's a great commercial. It's him. He's vacuuming and dancing on the ceiling as he did it.
I'll have to check that out. I don't remember that commercial at all.
And at the end of his life, he anointed Michael Jackson as his heir apparent.
Oh, wow.
And I will say this. There's a time, I think in the 70s, that he does a dance number for the Oscars, and he's doing this conservative dance, and it's like, oh, wow, how cute. And then he goes off, and you have to see it. You really get to see how talented this guy was. We talked about it before, how he became a skateboarder in his 70s. He was actually put into the Skateboard Hall of Fame. I mean, really super interesting guy. His wife, who is still, she's still with us.
Right.
Which is cool, you know. But let's go over to Sonny the Easter Bunny is played by an actor named Skip Hanant. He was on The Electric Company, the poor man Sesame Street, I like to call it. He was the word decoder, Fargo, North Decoder. But he did a lot of voice acting work over the years. It seems like he retired in 90, and he's now 83 and still with us. Bob McFadden played the voice of Chugs the Train. He was born in 23. He passed away in 2000. Singer and impressionist. With, by the way, here's the universe working with us. Not only Snarf from Thundercats, but hello, Frankenberry from cereal commercial. How about that? He also, in the Whisk laundry detergent commercials, which I remember, he did those voices. He also did Jingle the Elf in the 1974 Rankin and Bass special, The Year Without a Santa Claus.
Well, you're talking about him as an impressionist. And I mean, clearly Chugs is a very Jimmy Durante voice. You know,
it's yes.
very like, Like, I think I can.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was Rankin and Bass had such an affection for old Hollywood. So that's why you see all those legends of the past. That's why they would work with the Fred Astaires, the Mickey Rooneys, but all those throwback things. Kind of cool. Meg Sargent plays Lily Longtooth, our villain in this. James Spies plays King Bruce. Didn't see much about good old Bruce the Frail.
He was too frail to go to auditions.
You probably.
Know, get out there. He couldn't do a casting at all. Yeah.
That's what it is, Christian. Yeah. Thanks. That's
probably what it is.
Character, yeah. By the way, but we'll get there. Alan Swift played Gadzooks. Now, Alan Swift, if you're an Underdog fan, he played Simon Bar Sinister. He played Riff Raff, Howdy Doody, the short-lived Fritos commercials, Frito Bandito, which was back then taken off because it was politically incorrect and they felt derogatory toward Mexicans, so they took that off. But he played it. And then the Drano commercial, he did the voice. And then also Captain Cupcake, which I remember, in the Hostess brand commercial. So he was, and he was
so with he was friends with Twinkie the Kid?
Probably.
Oh, I love
it. Frenemies.
Okay, that makes more
they
sense.
They might have been frenemies.
Definite frenemies.
Friendships, yeah. Behind the scenes, a lot of backstabbing. And again, probably another episode.
Yeah, Ryan Murphy will do a duel on Captain Cupcake and Twinkie the Kid.
And Twinkie the Kid, by the way, really should. Ron Marshall, Hallelujah Jones, New York-based voice actor and singer, was with us till 2000. He played the mayor and Mr. Thistlewaite in Rankin and Bass's Year Without a Santa Claus. Fred Astaire, of course, sings the song, but then all the other songs are sung by Ron Marshall, Skip Hinnant. Even the Hendrew Sisters, the Chickens, is clearly an homage to the Andrew Sisters. So once again, it's like they've got this thing where they call back to the old greats. I digress.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that they never went into the studio with Phil Spector. I'm glad that the Hendrew Sisters strictly worked with Rankin and Bass. So their story has a much happier ending.
And I'm glad they were one and done with just this special.
Oh, such a waste, sadly. Yeah. Anyway, the song Big Rock Candy Mountain. So it was interesting, too, because between Big Rock Candy Mountain and The Little Engine That Could, the book, they took things, non-holiday things, and put it in this. So Big Rock Candy Mountain was a song written close to the end of the 19th century. It was a look at what everyone, especially hobos, were searching for. Now, it was censored in the 1980s from the original mention of cigarette trees and streams of alcohol trickling through the rocks. They are now peppermint trees and lemonade. The beer in this is named Gadzooks, a medieval English way of saying God's hooks, the nails of Jesus' crucifixion. Therefore, the Christian reason for Easter is tactfully acknowledged. Sonny the Bunny is named after Santini Corleone from The Godfather. And anything on that one?
I didn't dive any deeper into that. I probably should have.
I think you really should have.
I missed the boat on that one, Kevin.
Can you Google me as we're doing this live?
I can certainly that.
Maybe it's just someone having fun.
That would explain the outtake where he kisses Gadzook on the cheek and says, "I knew it was you, Gadzook." So it's a fine. It didn't really fit in the story, so I'm glad they cut it out. But it's all starting to come together now.
So back to The Little Engine That Could, that was from a 1902 article that was written. And then eventually there are multiple versions of this. And eventually in 1930 and then in 1954, it's turned into short stories with better and better illustrations. And then in 1976, they rework it again and it gets a lot of attention because I remember The Little Engine That Could.
Sure.
It's a famous children's book. But it's interesting that they put it in an Easter special. I just feel like a little lack of creativity there.
Could it have gone into the public domain like the year before or something? You know, and Rock Candy Mountain, could it have just been like, oh yeah, we can use this stuff now? I don't know. 75 years might be enough, you know?
Well, in Big Rock Candy Mountain, it's candy and it's... I kind of get it. Here's an interesting goof. S.D. Sluger is shown in one of the early scenes as a kid and a founder of Kid Film, which again, I think it's a plot point you really didn't need. But then at the end, he's driving some of the same kids on his train.
Well, they all have that disease that Gary Coleman and Emmanuel Lewis had. Kids don't actually age. That's actually very common in Kidville because there was, we didn't see it in the special, but there was a twin nuclear reactor site actually very close by.
You know what was weird about Kidville? So we have this supposed town that is just all kids, but it didn't make sense about why they what happened when they did grow older. You know, if you're going to do that, maybe there was more. You had Winter Warlock, and so you've played with magic and witchcraft before. Maybe there was something that was keeping them from growing up, and that's your villain.
Right.
You know, I mean, again, it's just it was so lazy.
You know, or when you turn 13, does Sonny go around with brightly colored cyanide tablets for everyone on the table? And they're like, oh, thanks, Sonny. So,
well, even that wouldn't work because Sonny came later.
That's a great point.
Or it could have been a rumswinger like the Amish.
I know we're trying to go through this, but I have to... The biggest hole to poke in Kidville is the idea that they're all kids. That is absolutely not a problem. I get it. You know, it's magical. It's fantastical. But the idea that then for several years, an unhoused drifter gets to hang out with all these children.
Yes, we're going to get there. Our hobo. Yeah,
no,
yes.
But it's just like, I'm like, so the Kidville thing doesn't get explained. That's why I'm bringing it up now. Because I'm like, just need another sentence about something magical about Kidville, you know? And I you know, it's like a Peter Pan Neverland, just something. Just right. Even if it doesn't make sense, like, just let us know that you're thinking about it and address it. That's all I'm asking for in these specials.
Yeah, well, especially when a hobo does walk in with a bunch of kids. We will get to that.
I'll put a pin in my comment till we do.
Yes. You know, as we said, we opened with S.D. Kluger, and instead he says, I've traded in my sleigh for a train now, which, again, I love the whole through line. And we basically have the same opening that we have for Santa Claus is Coming to Town with the world announcer each year. Yep. Which I love. We have stock footage, and we're going to answer all these questions that kids would have on why you should believe in the Easter Bunny or what the origin of the Easter Bunny is. I love, it's the same thing. We're going to take old stock footage, have a dramatic news announcer do it. Kind of starts out, you know, okay, like I'm with this. And then obviously, as we said, it kind of starts to fall apart after that. From here, again, and I really did like the theme song. I don't know. Did you guys like the theme song? I loved this. I'm like, okay, this is like not so bad. Why? Because I have seen other people's reviews on this and people just tear it to shreds online. I was like, oh, maybe they're all being too hard.
I've been holding back. But I do like the open. I like the kids asking questions. I think that's, you know, this is for children. I think that some of that stuff works. But yeah, it's there, you know, but it's really like, I don't know. It loses the thread almost instantly.
So it lost the thread for me when the rabbit Sonny was the orphan, and then in a year he was like conducting the town meeting.
Yes,
I was like, all right, let's
open that one up. So Ev from Gen Z weighed in with what I knew he would say, which is he hates backstory, the way they explain Han Solo, the way he. Because he grew up in a time where he's so used to that. We were not. So for us, when we get a backstory, even when we got a backstory on Cobra Kai and it all came together and, oh, this is how it happened. We thought it was cool, but his generation grew up with it. So he was, you know, not into it. I really wish we had him on because of all the politically incorrect stuff that I know. This would freak him out. Getting back to, we learn that Gadzooks is kind of the Winter Warlock. Listen, they obeyed one rule, or they tried to. And there's a rule in filmmaking about sequels. I don't know if you've ever heard this one, Christian. It's from Robert McKee, the famed screenwriting professor. When you want to make a sequel, the best way to make a successful sequel is basically make the same movie again.
Right.
No one will admit that, but you just make the same movie and you'll have a successful sequel. And the problem is, with back in the day when they did sequels, most of them didn't work because they would not do that. We know better now. More sequels are better now than they have been. But back in the day, sequels, they were few and far between. First of all, them making it, and second of all, them being very good.
Just to illustrate that, to use the Die Hard franchise for a second, the second Die Hard film was successful, but all they did is they took Die Hard and they put it in an airport. and there's no real sense for why characters are there. So then with the third Die Hard movie, they bought a screenplay called Simon Says, and they adapted it into a Die Hard movie with Bruce Willis and none of the old characters. That is a far better movie because they're like, hey, let's not do that. Let's not just try to do the same movie somewhere else. And I think you do get some more of that now. But yeah, I mean, if you see, I mean, Superman 1 and 2, the Richard Donner movies, they were filming them at the same time, you know, mm-hmm. and it's just, it's like,
yeah, Superman 2 is reviewed very well.
Yeah, but no, they're great, but it's also like, oh, okay. I mean, they took the ending for Superman 2 and put it in Superman 1, so like it's all a mismatch. But I agree that this is one of those times where this isn't really a sequel per se, but it's also sort of
they took the blueprint. Let's make the same thing.
Yeah.
But the problem is it was either laziness or the creativity was gone or they were just overwhelmed with other projects. So the idea was, hey, fine, let's have a villain like Winter Warlock who can have his character arc and see the light. But Gadzooks, we just know he's just miserable and just he, right. All we know about him from the beginning is he steals anything that's fun or holiday related, but we don't really know why. The Winter Warlock we knew, you were trespassing.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, like, could he be any Gadzooks? Could the voice be any more stereotypical of an idiot? I mean,
yeah.
But
I thought that added to the character. And on Gadzooks, when they were singing the song and he got the new Easter outfit, when they brought in the female Gadzooks, that was one of my favorite parts.
Okay, getting ahead, Ann.
Sorry.
It is kind of the thing that
Which
way did it go, George?
Yeah. You go from Keenan Wynn playing Winter Warlock to this.
Yeah.
The only thing missing from Gadzooks was the fact that, oh, he's just angry because he has a toothache. You know, it's like you almost felt like it was such a paint by numbers thing. And he's like, oh, he's okay. He's our friend now. And he's not really the bad guy. And like, why he doesn't eat Aunt Lily at one point, I don't know. I mean, I think that
he doesn't even help redeem them the way that Winter Warlock did.
That's true. Yeah.
We'll get there. So and you made a great point about Sonny. I felt the same way. So Sonny turns one, and okay, I'll buy into the fact that one in a rabbit is an adult, so he's an adult around kids, so obviously he's going to be smarter. But definitely the way he becomes the CEO of Kidville immediately,
big time,
and starts introducing various business strategies and things that it's like, huh. Where's this from?
Yeah, no, they didn't even realize that he'd bought 51% of the voting stock in Kidville. And the next thing they knew is like, oh, I guess this guy's in charge now.
And he's like, we need to get this out to the outside world. Why? Why did they need to get,
I mean,
them, what they were doing to the, why did they need to?
Well, not to give it away for free. If he was getting into the outside world so that there could be financial gain for Kidville Inc., that would have made sense. You know, if you're like selling Easter candy, but it seems like you're going to go give it away.
And I think the chicken should have had more of a say because all of a sudden they had to up production like crazy.
Well,
and they didn't even have a vote at the table.
No, there had never been a suffragette movement in Kidville because none of them were old enough to vote. So the chickens really didn't get a voice. Yeah.
Easily fixed, though, again.
Very easily.
A few tweaks.
They could have tied it to the fact that they could have easily tied it to whatever was keeping them kids. This could be the thing to break them free.
Yes.
You know, I mean, with the Kringles had all the toys, but, you know, they had no kids to give them to. That was because of the Winter Warlock was blocking them. And Kris Kringle said, hey, when I'm old enough, I'll take them over. So could have even been that, like, we make all these great eggs, whatever we're doing, but we can't get it to the outside world because we can't get it by Gadzooks. So, you know, again, just follow the blueprint of the first one. There's even more creative ways to do it, but even at the base could. So again, this is just the beginning of this all falling apart. Sonny makes it to the town, which is gloomy and gray with no kids. If any children are born there, the whole family has to move away under the laws of the 7-year-old King Bruce the Frail. And of course his aunt, Duchess Lily Longtooth, who really runs everything. So the production, everyone loved the production design, which is classic of Rankin Bass. They give us, it's a gray town that is void of creativity. I even thought the term Bruce the Frail was rather shameful. You would never think today, I don't think they would ever do that.
No,
yeah,
I don't.
No, it's a very like Monty Python character, you know, where it's like it's not supposed to be a good name. And actually, now that I'm saying it, he is kind of like the prince from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. He's very similar. This is him as a boy. But yeah, it's like Bruce the Frail, you know, and I don't know. Look, it's like how in the Goonies, it's supposed to be funny that the kid uses an inhaler for his asthma every few minutes. So I guess it's, you know, like, hey, aren't you glad you're not weak?
You know what I mean? It'd be one thing to use the inhaler, but to be like Bruce the Wuss, Bruce the everyone blocks it, Bruce the
right.
Wuss,
like, because he wasn't like frail in stature. He was kind of a stocky little kid, you know what I mean? And so he didn't appear frail. So it didn't even make sense.
Missing from his story is the fact that like Lily's a sorceress or something, and that's why he can't stand up to her. I actually expected some payoff with that, you know. Same. And I was just like, okay, so he's like, oh, he can do anything he wants, but then when he's in the room with her, he's like, okay. There was not that relationship wasn't fleshed out like, at all.
Being a kid scared of her, I kind of get that part of it.
Yeah, especially back in the day.
Yes.
All adults. When you were
petrified, rightfully so.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Evan wouldn't understand that, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah, we did used to be scared of adults. That's true.
Yes. All of them. And they could all yell at us no matter.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, your neighbor could give you a spanking and your parents would be like, well, what did you do to deserve that?
Yes.
Right. No questions asked.
Yeah, no questions asked.
He complains he doesn't want to be a king. He wants to be a normal child. And one of her laws is that beans are the only food everyone has to eat. Saddened by this, Sonny heads back to Kidville and explains the problem. In comes Hallelujah Jones. Okay, yeah, I see Kristen shaking his head. So
I like every character in Mad Monster Party more than Hallelujah Jones. Every character in Mad Monster Party is better than Hallelujah Jones.
Wow. That is some strong dislike for the hobo.
I have to say, Christian, now that you said that, I'm with you. I'm with you. And
Felix Flerken is a way better character than this guy.
I agree with Felix. I think I like Hallelujah better than somebody on Mad Monster.
I mean, he's a con man, and they never really deal with that. He's like, oh yeah, I was just in town, yeah, and I might go check out Kidville. If you're not there, there's room for me. No, you're not a kid. There's no room
that
for
was
you.
So creepy.
And he's an expert in everything.
Yeah. No, so Mr. Polanski, you are not allowed in our town. No.
But so dare I say he was slightly redeemed, guys, because he did gather all the hobos together who had a good work ethic and got the railroad built.
He did provide jobs for the – you're right. You're right. Thank you, Ann. See?
Yeah, that's true.
I thought about that moment.
Yeah.
When you talk about the unhoused community, he's one of the good ones is what Ann Sleeman says. Yeah.
But that's my whole thing. He was so wise, and yet, you know, okay, so why is he a hobo? But I have an answer for that. Now, do you remember, it's a little before your time, Christian, Anne?
Oh, God, pressure.
How much do you remember what I'm going to call hobo culture back in the 70s?
I mean, I remember groups of people, like, that just lived in little, you know, like, outdoor communities and stuff like that.
Or with the character of the hobo.
Oh, yeah. I was a hobo. You know, I know we're not supposed to say that now, but probably 5 or 6 years easy running for Halloween. I had the stick with the bandana at first, but then who wants the props for Halloween? Because it gets in the way of carrying your bag of candy. And if I was it 5 or 6 times, my brother, who's 1 year older than me, he was it 9 to 10 times. Easiest costume ever. Yeah. Love it. So, yes.
Thanks, Norman Rockwell, for perpetuating that. Him and, what was it, Red Buttons? You know, I mean, it's like, it's enough already. You know, stop glorifying the hobo.
Well,
it's bad, though.
Well, here's the thing. So, I had an English teacher that went deep with it when I was in seventh grade.
Cool.
It's very cool.
We went over the history. So, it seems like it really took... Hobo life really took off in the 20s when the market crashed in the Depression.
Mm.
And so what happened would be they would ride the trains. They would just get day work when they could and just kind of go city to city. My teacher even had a cabin, her dad did. And she would say, yeah, you know, when we would come to the cabin in the summer, we would see an ashtray that would be used with an old cigar butt, and it would be the hobos would come in, and you know, they were that's how they existed. And so it wasn't really looked down upon as homeless, and but it was, it definitely by the 70s became a caricature, and that's when they were actually starting to fade out, because it was, you know, past that. And she was telling, I remember her, the teacher telling us this, saying, yeah, you know, they're now phasing out, you don't have them anymore. But it was a thing, and then became heightened as a, like I said, as a caricature. So, and yes, where these guys have such a, they're so about the 30s and 40s with Hollywood and everything else. So of course they have the hobo character, which today would just not fly at Never. All. Term for them today, right? It's what's the politically correct for a homeless?
I mean, I've said it a few times. You're supposed to refer to them as unhoused. But, unhoused. What I'm talking about too is, like, this is clearly a simpler time, because now they'll move into your rental property while no one's in it, change the locks, and you'll need, you know, several court orders and some vigilante justice to get them out of your home. So the hobos would move on in those days. Now they're just going to put down roots and tell you that you can't kick them out of your house.
Squatters' rights.
Correct. Yeah, we're really getting off.
They were more transient.
Maybe a little. No. But that's how I feel about Hallelujah Jones. Okay. Yeah. I feel like he's a squatter moving into my rental property near the beach.
And won me back over. You're right. I like that he got his hobo brothers and sisters to come help. That
was got the job done.
I'm sure they stole candy the whole time. They were stealing eggs. They were stealing jelly beans, you know.
But he also, on his note, he saved Chugs when the butter was on the track. He was the brilliant mind that said, let's smash up some beans and throw it on the track.
Okay, but here's another writing faux pas, people. Ready for another one? We're doing a little film class.
There's so many.
Right? Here's another writing faux pas. He's a supporting character. And yet all the movement and the solutions come from him. And it should be coming from Sonny or Bruce. It should be coming from your main characters. They can support you. They can have their moments, but it seems like he's the one who's like, oh, we'll just do this. Oh, we'll just do that. Oh, we'll just do, you know, whereas think of Kris Kringle. He drove it and then he got support from Winter Warlock, from Jessica, you know, but he was driving it.
It's not like Blitzen solved all the problems in one of the Santa specials, you know?
Right. Okay, so this is where we have to figure out, how do we get the eggs past Gadzooks? Well, we're going to dip them in colors and say they're colored rocks. That's going to be our...
I'm sorry, but now we call them rocks of color. That's how we would classify them.
So Sonny's able to lie to Gadzooks and say, I've just got these rocks, and Gadzooks lets him pass. Makes it to town, passes out all the eggs to the townspeople, and King Bruce crowns him the Easter Bunny Royal Knight of Rainbow Eggs, and he and Sonny hold a traditional ritual of eating the eggs. However, Lily, Aunt Lily, is disappointed in her nephew, chases Sonny out, outlaws eggs, sends him to bed without his supper. Sonny apologizes for the problem, but promises that next year he'll bring back very special beans, because all Bruce was going to miss out on was beans. I'll bring you some special ones next year.
It was probably the first good night's sleep he had in his life, Bruce, because it was the one night where he didn't have beans right before bed, so he could just actually fall directly to sleep. A little gassy.
So now we invent jelly beans, so we've answered that whole thing. Gadzooks now is angry because it's rocks and not eggs, and this time he throws them really far away. All hope seems lost, but the children hunt the eggs up in the bushes and trees, and to which Sonny now realizes that he'll always hide them. Again, I don't think that's the strongest way to get us to why we hide Easter eggs. I digress.
Yeah, I also thought it was going to be like, you know, they're hiding them so, you know, Aunt Lily doesn't find them.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there for you.
It's like there's some of the storytelling, you're like, oh, it's so obvious what they're going to do. And then they don't do the thing. And it's not because they surprised you with something new and inventive. It was like, oh, it's just something that makes no sense. Okay.
Right.
Well done.
And I remember as being a kid and I'm like, all right, if he chucked the eggs that far, even if they're Easter eggs and they're hard boiled, they're going to be all smashed and nasty.
Yeah.
They're not going to be like under the grass and the leaves and all pretty like that. So it always bothered me even when I was little.
Sonny would have needed to start bubble wrapping them and then maybe they would have a chance.
And wait, I didn't even ask you. And you remember seeing this? I remember seeing this in 77. Do you?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if it was a special, we were all in.
And I bought it. I bought in then.
I probably, I mean, I can't imagine I didn't because I took everything at face value. So I'm sure I did, but I remember not liking that they chucked the eggs and rolling them down the hill. I'm like, how come we don't do that? We live on a giant hill.
I think that I was as basic at that age as I am today. And being so basic, I just bought in. I was such a civilian.
Yeah.
Great. I love the theme song. And I was just all in, sadly. So next Easter, Sonny sets out, and now he gets caught by Gadzooks. And again, here's another big character flaw. And Gadzooks chases him back to Kidville, where they make him a big outfit. And this is the first Easter suit, and Gadzooks, with his dumb voice, gets all emotional. But where did we ever establish that no one gave him anything, that he wanted an Easter suit? You know what I mean? The Winter Warlock, I understand when he got it, he's like, no one ever gives a mean old warlock a toy. I wasn't buying this. I'm happy.
The Winter Warlock is one of the greatest characters in any of these specials, I think. And his storyline's amazing. He tugs at your heartstrings. It all makes sense. And then you're right. Like, and I didn't think about it until you just started pointing out all the flaws of Gadzooks, but it's like, why is this bear even wanting a suit? Like, and why are we making it for him? Why all of it? Does there's no backstory, and he's just not likable, and you don't even really care. Unlike Winter Warlock, who you pull for, I think he brings me to tears every time I see that.
And you know, again, if I'm producing this, I'm going to get a Keenan Wynn, an amazing character actor, rather than another voice impressionist who's going to give us a dumb, for a pivotal character, rather than give it a dumb stereotype 70s. Goon voice.
Yeah. I mean, it's 77. I would call Paul Lynde. I could just imagine that, you know. I mean, how great would that voice?
I would not call Paul Lynde. I'll tell you why. He was red hot at that time.
Oh,
well, I would want a 40s or 50s. I'd want a Paul Mooney.
Yeah, I was going to say who's the washed up Paul Lynde by 77, you know, the 50s Paul Lynde.
I'm thinking like who's a strong character actor again, like a Paul Mooney. I'm trying to think. I think Peter Lorre unfortunately was gone by then.
Yeah. But by the way, a Peter Lorre Gadzooks would have definitely worked, you know.
Yes.
I mean, I would have loved to have heard that.
It's me, so I went, well, 77 though. Larry Fine was just checking out at that point.
Yeah.
To go Mad Monster Party, I think Boris Karloff could have been the Gadzooks character.
It would have been a better choice for sure.
You know, probably too big. He had to lead it. Yeah. So, but you never know at that time. You know, they were all looking for work. Meanwhile, back in the townspeople quickly grow interested in the Easter eggs. Sonny hides them. King Bruce and the other servants enjoy the jelly beans, and the children are loved now by all the townspeople. Lily, outraged at all celebrating, sends her guards out to arrest them, but Sonny and the children promise to still return next year. Next Easter, Sonny has the candy maker concoct a secret weapon of his own for their next visit to town. Hallelujah Jones, our friend, the hobo, suggests Sonny should do something for King Bruce to stand up to Lily. Sonny takes his idea to the Kidville seamstress and pillow makers. On their next visit, after chasing the guards, to trip on the rolling Easter eggs, which, again, this is some tradition. But they do roll Easter eggs downhill, and you've never heard of that tradition?
I mean, I guess every time it's brought up, yes, I've heard of it, but I've never actually witnessed it.
I know they do like the Easter egg roll on the White House lawn every year.
Yeah. So
there's something about rolling them, but I didn't know it's like down the hill. And I know it's off topic, but you know, the three of us who grew up in the Northeast is that many years Easter egg hunting does not even happen outside. You know, my wife grew up in Southern California. So this concept of like, no, we would hunt eggs or chocolate eggs, whatever, in the living room. You would lose a limb if you hunted out in the yard, you know.
And were your plastic Easter eggs filled with pennies and nickels or candy?
The money ones are the ones I remember the most. for sure, because those were probably the ones I liked the most. And a little bit of jelly beans. I don't remember chocolate eggs ever being in.
Oh, too expensive in. No.
No, it was like one or two jelly beans and like a nickel. The big prize was probably a quarter.
One egg with a quarter in it that, you know, that would be in the, you know, the extra special hiding place, but it was mostly pennies in my house and a mix of not chocolate, but other candies and things. Yeah, for sure.
Definitely chocolate was a little too expensive, too pricey. Yeah.
And we got one chocolate egg.
Yeah, it would be the,
Russell Stovers.
We'd get like on the table, we'd have the chocolate bunny, but it was the hollow one, you know.
Well, again, we all agree we're a hollow bunny team here.
Of course.
Only the rich kids.
Always hollow, never solid.
the 5 foot solid chocolate, it might as well have been, you know, a gold bar from Fort Knox. You're like,
totally.
You had a solid bunny?
Yeah. Only in my dreams. Only in my dreams.
But I knew
not in my school district, by the way. No one.
Did you know one or two? There was always one or two who got the solid bunny.
Oh yeah.
No, those are the kids at the private school inside the park.
No, the girl who told me that there was no Santa Claus always got the solid bunny.
You know what Dr. Phil would say to her, Ian?
Bye, B. I
would say, and how'd that work out for you? The guards think they're capturing Sunny, but guess what? It's a chocolate bunny. And so, of course, the guards now just want to eat the bunny. So this is pretty clever. Okay, that was a good one. That was a good way. That was good. And Bruce is now gifted his first stuffed animal because the Kidville seamstresses and pillowmakers make a stuffed animal so he doesn't feel lonely at night. And I guess this is their way of explaining how stuffed animals are a big part of Easter. And would you consider stuffed animals a big part of Easter? I mean, I know we have them, but it's like, to me, it's Easter grass, candy, Easter suits. Am I wrong?
I never remember getting a stuffed animal for Easter.
Oh, I did. Yeah. There would usually be a rabbit and they would be like, you know, a stuffed rabbit, but not the kind that's like soft and squishy like you'd get now. It was like a hard stuffed rabbit. And you would have seen it earlier in the week at the supermarket. This wasn't like from a department store or anything. And you're like, guess the Easter Bunny does his grocery shopping at ShopRite just like we do. All right, good enough.
Listen, when I did wise up, when I got to junior high and I knew it was a scam,
yeah,
I was all about the half off Easter candy the next day.
Oh
nicely
played. I still am. I'm still about that. I agree.
I'm going until my 30s.
Yeah.
I used to have a friend who would hit me. He's like, we would compare half-price Easter candy notes. I'd be like, oh, I'm so in.
Kev, dare I say you could be the world-leading expert on half-price Easter candy purchases.
Man, I'm so overwhelmed. We don't want to water down my brand.
That's true.
No. And then you could outsource it to someone who figured out how to find a partner who wanted to celebrate Valentine's Day on the 15th just for the sole purpose that they could buy discounted Valentine's candy. You know, I mean, it's the same thinking. It's like, if I can just hold off one more day, I'm going to get it 50% off. And if I can hold off a week, it'll be 75% off.
It does go to 75.
Oh, wow. It sure does.
But you could spin it with milk dud eggs.
A week from today, I'll be in CVS looking at what's been marked down from the day before.
Nice.
Okay, so now, just when we want Sonny to stand up to Lily, he's frail. He backs down to her. He backs down to the aunt again. But this time now, but Sonny's like still determined. Don't worry, we'll still come back. That's where Lily's guards hold out a rope, cause Gadzooks to trip and break his leg.
By the way, they have established that he's stupid, so that actually works. You know, it's like
Here's the thing. What has Gadzooks done for us? Think about this. Winter Warlock was an antagonist. He stops being antagonist. He becomes a friend. He teaches him Kris Kringle how to see the future. Then he has magic at the end to show us the first Christmas trees, and by the way, the magic feed corn. You know, so Gadzooks, his strength. He's clearly not smart, but he's super big and strong. He could have pushed the train. He could have did so many things. He was just, again, a little filmmaking 101. He was supposed to have done, and he didn't. He just was just a big lump.
I like to think of Gadzooks as the first, last, and only Easter fashionista. He's the first one to really like introduce the spring line. You know, he's the first Easter suit. He shows it off, and it's like, who wore it better? The answer is always Gadzooks. Mr. Blackwell would agree.
Fair enough.
You
know. All right. Well,
what he should have done is he should have put the guards down the first time so they would know he was a formidable opponent. And then the second time, just like they did with Winter Warlock, they ended up trapping them. Remember, they went up to the, you know, like,
yeah,
but nothing was ever established with him.
Just to call back the Bumble would have taken care of he would have definitely made sure they never looked his way again.
Think Absolutely. Of the, yeah, right. The Bumble in Rudolph, when he got defanged, he was great at putting up the star in the tree.
It's true. Yeah.
And you're right. He would have done something. It's the Bumble I know anyway. okay. So now we go to work on the railroad to have a train take us over to Big Rock Candy Mountain, the Big Rock Mountain, to be able to now deliver the eggs to Kidville. Hobo's friends come in, help us build, and they have to find an engine, a real engine, by the way. I'm going to go back to 70s, the peak of choo-choo train culture. Like, so much stuff ended, you guys, in that era.
So true.
Hobos ended, all of this stuff, like, but Easter at its peak then, but it was all about choo-choo trains. Tyco, yeah. And, you know, there were the big ones, and there was the mini Tyco trains. And now, gone, but trains were a big part of Arcana and kid life back then. So them tapping into trains, it was definitely part of the times.
Thanks, Jimmy Carter.
Oh wait, what did Jimmy do?
No, I'm just saying for the time, the what the era was. It was like by 1980, forget it, it was all gone.
Well, I think that we go in periods, and I feel like 70s was truly the end of post World War II.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, it's like that was the hangover. That was the end of it. And then 80 was the reset. And we're kind of coming out of the end of that.
Well,
now,
not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but the 80s was the era where entertainment solely exists to act as like 30-minute commercials, like G.I. Joe, Transformers, etc. It was like, it was much more about the money than the storytelling. This was like, we can poke holes in the storytelling here, but they weren't trying to sell you a Gadzooks. They weren't trying to sell you a Sunny Bunny kit. You know?
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I think that the 80s is definitely sort of the explosion of let's just figure out the bare minimum of educational content we can put into this stuff, but we want to sell you, you know, an aircraft carrier for $120 and, you know, $1984.
Go to your Toys R Us and just be in heaven, sadly. And now Toys R Us just exists in pop-ups in Macy's. You know, the brand still pops up, but it's changed. Okay, so they hire Chugs because he's the only one that doesn't think he's too good for the job to do it. He's a retired old train. And even this was kind of cool production design. It looked like an old choo-choo train versus newer train. They fix it and spruce it up, which we don't see, which I would have loved to have seen. Again,
yes.
Need for everyone to work together to lift him up and make and restore his confidence. That would have been a nice moment that they missed. And Lily's gonna butter the rails, and like you said, Anne, how Lily Jones like, oh, we'll just put on some jelly beans to give you some traction. Then we get the I know I can, which is from the book. He's repeating those quotes over and over, and he finally finds a way to get up and over the hill, and Lily is overpowered and the people are all happy. But this is not always a nice Rankin and Bass touch, but often a Rankin Bass touch where the villain is redeemed. So unlike Burgermeister, who's not redeemed, he just fades away like most leaders like that do after all the damage they pull. This one gets redeemed. They give her a flower that they name Lily. There's our Easter Lily. And I think that's kind of, it's a nice moment and it's clever. So this is how we begin with Easter Lilies. And then, you know, we go back to a shortened version of the song and we're out. And off he goes.
Yeah.
And that was it.
that was all she wrote. Yeah.
An exhausted sigh.
Yeah, it's a relieved sigh of the 50 minutes, and I've never been happier that special was available in its entirety on YouTube. Not YouTube Premium. I didn't have to rent it. I just got to, you know, somebody ripped the DVD to YouTube a few years ago, and I'm like, great, I can just sit and watch it.
And nobody cared enough from the Rankin and Bass side or whoever owns the copyright. Oh,
you try and put Rudolph up there and see what happens. But this and Mad Monster Party are there forever.
But Mad Monster Party, as we discussed, still has a cult following. This is like zero. No,
there's nothing. There's no heat off of this. And I think it comes down to the storytelling. And you know, it's fun to sort of talk back and forth, the three of us, and you know, get Evan's opinion as well. But to actually watch, it's not that fun. It's very derivative of past works. It's like using the same sets. And it's basically the same story as a couple of different specials, but not told anywhere near as well. And it's, you know, I mean, I think that the songs, the first song is good, but then like the later songs kind of feel like parody songs, you know, like Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, like Dr. Demento style songs. Right. No, they're not good songs, you know?
They're not. They do have their version on this of put one foot in front of the other. They have a version of it where, you know, it's a Fred Astaire song that he sings, but again, not as good of a song and just doesn't seem to stick.
And why does every kid have a New York accent, by the way? Like, it's like, how do we find out about that, Easter Bunny? You know, it's like, they all talk like that?
Again, a 70s thing.
Yeah, that's a very 70s thing.
70s right? thing, probably.
Think about the Bad News Bears. They all talk like that, basically.
And I think because of, he was older guys writing this, most of them were New Yorkers. You know, New York Jewish guys who came out of that neighborhood. And it was, remember, even the Stooges, everyone had that little, that New York kind of slang.
So there's a couple things that I'm surprised Evan wasn't triggered by, but there is a point where they try to brush past it, but they talk about how in Kidville, you know, and everyone worshiped the Lord in their own way, the true Lord. And, you know, no Jews or Muslims. We worship the Lord. And then also I thought it was interesting that they talked about the big, white, beautiful eggs. Well, we can enjoy a brown egg every once in a while. And I know it's because you're going to dye them later in the story.
You're here.
But, you know, they're only talking about the white eggs. There's one religion. And I do wish Evan was here because I would want to ask him, like, They talked about worshiping the Lord with a capital L. Like, you know, you can feel that way yourself, but should children be subjected to organized religion?
I thought Santa Claus, again, coming to town, did it more tastefully when they said, well, he had to choose only one night, and it was the only night. It was the holiest night of the year. And that's it. They just left it at that.
Yeah.
They didn't pop you over the head. Yeah, that song is all you have to do is think you can do. So it was this it was the sentiment of one foot in front of the other, but just didn't seem to deliver, you know, sadly. I'll tell you right now, though, I'm going to throw it out here as our little podcast, Christmas Specials We Love, because I just, I'm too dumb to quit, if anyone knows me. and the other side of my gravestone, that'll be one side. The other side will say, if you tried harder. I feel like I want to take another crack at this in some way, shape, or form. And
yes. I want all in
story. I want to fix it. I want to figure it out.
I would love that.
I think that would
be amazing. Yeah. I think the premise is there. I think there's a lot of good parts to it. And with a few tweaks and what did your friend Randall used to say?
He says it all the time. Just a few minor adjustments.
Just a few minor adjustments. Yeah, perfect. A few minor, some maybe a little bit more major adjustments. And I think it would be a winner.
Okay, so listen, because we'll be here for another hour, and we're wicked busy in all of our other lives and things going on. But let's just have a brief candy discussion. Well, Anne, start with you. Your favorite Easter candies from then and now.
Okay, favorite Easter candy then was just kind of a simpleton, just the solid little foil wrapped egg.
Very nice.
I'm just going to jump in because mine's a slight variation on that. We didn't start getting them until I was a little bit older. It's the foil wrapped marshmallow egg. That's what I always liked the most as a kid. So it's like one generation up from that. Yeah, yeah. And we got to a point where that's what my parents would hide is foil wrapped marshmallow eggs around the house.
Well, they're a little bigger, but you know what? Also, they're affordable.
They are.
They're not the Cadbury. They're not the Cadbury.
Four for a dollar.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, not a fan of the marshmallow eggs myself. And
me neither.
When you nailed it with the problem with the foil egg is because I love food and candy so much that I couldn't get them in my mouth fast enough and feel. Okay. But it was good that it like slowed me down. And what else? But yeah, you're on the money with those. In
yeah, those were definitely my favorite. I mean, I like the classic Brock's big jelly bean more than the trendier, newer Jelly Belly bean. For black and pink are terrible. I'd suffer through the pink, but the blacks all went to my mom.
And is the black similar to the black?
Is licorice.
To the black licorice? That's what I was going to ask.
I was really worried about where that question was going. It basically tastes like black licorice. And when you would meet a kid who liked black jelly beans or black licorice, you're like, what is
I judge wrong them.
With you? What inhumanities have your parents subjected you to?
Kev, are you a fan?
What? No, because they kind of made me sick. Yeah. I could maybe do a jelly bean, black jelly bean, but no, to go all the way in with Twizzlers. No. And, but you know, I have a friend's father who's 80 and he's in Florida, and
okay.
And he drives once a week, an hour to get his black licorice.
Oh my gosh. I love him that he does that. Oh, that's adorable. Because that's just great.
But
that's
you know, good.
No, I was just going to say that's commitment and love. I just think that's great.
Well, again, we talk of the 70s. This was the end of black licorice. It was the end of ribbon candy. It was the end. You know, these are the things old people would give you. This was the end of all of that. All right, and what else for your Easter candies?
There was the Cadbury egg is not my favorite. I don't like that center, and I always got them, and I just
you had one. You guys are real hoity-toity.
Oh well, yes.
That's big money back.
big Easter was really
never saw a Cadbury egg in our house ever.
I would see them on the commercial. You remember where the rabbit is?
You know, maybe got them later in life. Now that you're mentioning it, I don't remember it in the basket.
I would see them on the commercial and I'm like, oh, I guess that those must be good. And when I finally had one, I was probably in junior high. I'm like, oh, this is awful. This is terrible.
Underwhelming.
Yeah, they're terrible. The middle is so gross.
It was like my first beer.
The Narragansett beer, terrible. the Gansett. Probably just the egg. The rabbit. Even though it was hollow and slightly disappointing, I liked the weird. Remember dots, the candy eye, like the yellow with the blue dot. That was probably my favorite part of it. And the ear was usually solid. Yep. So I guess I was just kind of a chocolate purist.
Okay. And then, Anne, were you partial to the vanilla white bunny?
Nope. Straight up. Just the regular chocolate bunny. I remember getting a white one, which I don't know if that was vanilla or white chocolate or what it was. It always left a weird film in the mouth.
Okay.
Not a fan.
Okay. Now, did the hollow bunny get wiped out in one sitting, or put it in the fridge and break pieces off? No, it got
wiped. No, my little sister was more disciplined, and she'd have her Easter bunny for like a month. Mine was gone that afternoon.
Wiped out. Yeah, me too.
Gone.
It was not our choice for how quickly we consumed it. It was to be doled out over time, and it did go back in the fridge. You only got to eat a little bit.
Nice. Good parents with discipline.
Yeah.
So, Christian, did you were entering into the sour phase, right? So you probably had things in the Skittle family, the sour.
Skittles were okay, but Sour Patch Kids I never liked. I liked Nerds, but those are more Halloween.
But your Easter, what Easter? So what
Easter is really the same stuff you guys are talking about. I agree on the Brock's jelly beans. You know, I think now I'd be fine with a Jelly Belly, but in that era, they were the bigger, you know, maybe not quite as flavorful, but still very sweet. But yeah, the chocolate bunny, I mentioned the marshmallow eggs, and it was the little foil eggs, like,
yeah,
that's what he was talking about.
Yeah. Those, the marshmallow ones were bigger. They were like, you know, almost Russell Stover sized, but not with the Russell Stover branding, of course.
Got it. Now, I will tell you, which I'm surprised no one's mentioned, that I love were the Robin's eggs.
Oh, I don't remember those.
My wife loves those. I will eat them. I enjoy the chocolatiness of them, but I never seek them out.
Got it. So, Anne, they're like, you know what I'm talking about. Remember malted milk balls, or, you know, so it's got that kind of crunchy, like almost like a cookie center.
Yep. But
then a layer of chocolate, and then with this, it's then a
like a candy coating.
Yes, but not a hard, super hard candy coating. It's soft, but they're in different colors.
Like the Cadbury mini egg.
Is that what it would be? So you would know it as that. But do you remember the, now that I mentioned the Robin?
I remember those. Those are fantastic. Yeah, I can't believe I forgot about those.
Yes, right. Big fan. And I also like them in presentation as well.
Oh, perfect. And speckled, right? Light colored. Yeah. I can't believe I forgot those, Kev.
Right, they're good. I've seen those in gum form. I've seen them in gum. I've seen them in a form of, as time went on, you bite into it, and then the center has a sour or a powder to it. But for me, I actually am a fan of the hollow vanilla bunny.
There you go.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm a fan. Never was Cadbury eggs. We did, you know, again, never solid bunnies. That was the rich people.
Right.
Also, Cadbury started coming around in the late 70s when we were aging out.
Yeah.
But I will say that some of the newer ones, the Reese's eggs, in theory, great. But I will tell you, a little too much for me, a little too much peanut butter.
I concur.
Right?
They have to be frozen for me to,
yes,
to enjoy, yes, them. Like, cause otherwise, it's just a lot of, ugh, it's too thick.
And now my kids will get like what you're talking about. The wrapping has a picture of a bunny. It's bunny shaped, the Reese's, but they also do the egg shaped Twix, which that is something that I might steal out of a basket or two now as an adult. Yeah.
I know. Yes, I know. Monday morning after Easter, maybe when I'm going to have a little cheap visit to see. Yes, I know what I'll be grabbing.
The Twix eggs. You know what? I'm surprised nobody's mentioned.
Well, I'm getting there, Ann, because I know where you're going. No, go, Ann. Go. Take it. I know where you're going.
No, I don't want to take it. You take it.
No. You do it, because you had a lot of good intel on this.
The peep.
Should I go to Ann's dossier on the peep? Do we have time?
I've only got another couple minutes, but what I'll say about the peeps is that I always enjoy opening the package and having one or two. But there's like five of them stuck together. And I'm like, I can't take it all in. I can't have that much sugar. And I'm even talking about when I was a kid, you know, I like the two pack of Peep was the great invention. I like putting them on graham crackers and microwaving them and turning them into s'mores. You know, there's all that stuff you can do now.
And you do with it? You really?
Yeah. You put like a little, like you would make s'mores, like with a Hershey's chocolate, and then you put a Peep.
Yeah.
I've done that over the last decade or so, I think.
Well, I'll tell you this, fellas, kids. We didn't cover it. There's actually an Easter hobo parade that continued to go until COVID in 2020. And is it back on, or is it still canceled?
I couldn't find anything about it now, so I'm assuming it's still canceled. I tried to find some more stuff on that.
Sorry. I'm seeing Gen Z would be so up in arms about a hobo parade today. So.
The protesters would be terrible.
Right? But back to the peeps. Sam Bourne was a Russian candy maker who immigrated to the U.S. in 1910 when he first introduced New York to his French chocolates. But this guy came up with chocolate sprinkles, the hard chocolate coating of Eskimo pies, and pretty much sticks attached to lollipops. But he moves to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania in 1932. He begins acquiring other candy companies. In 1940, he takes on Ike and Mike. In 1950, he takes Hot Tamales. Like, this guy was basically the candy don. Then in 1953, he acquires the Rota Candy Company, who made a small line of three-dimensional marshmallow chicks made by hand. And these things were very labor-intensive, and they were squeezed out of a pastry tube. It was Sam's son, Bob Bourne, who joined the company in 1946, who helped to mechanize the marshmallow farming process, and the results were amazing. And what once took 27 hours to produce and package, the Peeps chick could now be produced and packaged in 6 minutes.
Crazy.
And Bob Bond, the father of Peeps, just died in this January. He was on the 100th anniversary of Peeps, and he was 98 years old.
R.I.P. to him.
R.I.P.
Okay. Most popular Peeps, of course, are the yellow, followed by the pink, and the lavender, blue, green, and orange. But you know, there's 19 different flavors of Peeps. An average of 5.5 million Peeps are made every day.
Crazy.
And until 55, they used to have wings, but they clipped the wings off probably to make it cheaper and easier to produce. The eye is the final part added to the Peep. But in 1999, a pair of scientists at Emory University, dubbed Peep Investigators, decided to test the theory that Peeps are an indestructible food. In addition to a microwave, the pair tested the candy's vulnerability to tap water, boiling water, acetone, and sulfuric acid.
Oh.
Peeps survived them all. When they upped the ante with some phenol, the only things that didn't disappear were the eyes. 1.5 billion Peeps are consumed every spring. And if you aren't in Times Square for New Year's Eve, you can go to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where they drop a giant Peep that flashes multiple colors.
I love that.
We might have to go there.
I'd be all in. I've never wanted to see Punxsutawney Phil, but this I want to see. Dropping
right, go see the Peep. And I also think that I wonder what around Easter, what Hershey, Pennsylvania, Hershey Park is like.
Oh. That's a great point. Yeah.
That is a great point.
You know, they say we could use a little Christmas. I think the world needs a little more Easter. I think we've got to. There's got to be a way to resurrect the Easter Bunny. We got to wrap our heads around this.
I think we should, Kev. I think you're really onto something, and I think pulling in like the giant Peep thing, and that could kind of spark something. Yeah. And it has to be filmed in Pennsylvania, it seems like, because there's a lot of origins to the candy and up in Pennsylvania.
Also, I seem to believe that Easter really exploded through Woolworths. And I feel like it was a small store. No, don't laugh, Anne. It was a small store in the Pennsylvania area in the 20s. That's when it really took off.
Interesting. Yes.
You might have claimed Christmas, but Woolworths, the five and dime.
The five and dime, dude.
Really. And again, another thing that really hit its peak in the 70s.
Yeah.
And it was all after that disintegration. Do you guys remember going into Woolworths?
My mom was more of a Mammoth Mart girl, but
I don't have a Mammoth Mart, but
we were a Kmart family, but like a good Kmart, Woolworths also had a lunch counter with a full restaurant attached for some reason. But
the grilled cheeses, the hot dog.
I love the hot dog, it's
the best.
And you'd smell the popcorn as you walked in. But even the look of them, because again, one of the reasons why they went out, they never updated. So if you were in there in the 70s, it was very similar to what it looked like in the 20s, which was very cool. But from my research, it seemed like that's when the Easter consumerism and Easter Bunny kind of took off. So anyway, Anne, great work as always. Christian, you too. Wicked happy Easter to everybody. And oh, before we go, Anne, I know you probably have just a couple of comments.
Couple of quick shout outs. Yeah, especially since we are covering something that we got so many texts for. Like, it's funny that we didn't have a huge like love of the show because we got so many texts asking us to do this. So I just want to give a big shout out to a couple folks. One, I have to shout out to our super fan, Karen Marks from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She loves this show so much. She's listened to some of the episodes more than 30 times. Wow. And she may be a contender for a world leading expert on holiday throw blankets. She, along with any others, like I said, we're hoping we would do the show. Another person I wanted to give a quick shout out to via text was Mary from Kansas City. She wanted us all to know how much she loves the podcast. She says, "Your comments and observations speak right to my nostalgic heart. Please don't listen to any haters. Remember, they are all civilians and you are operating at a higher level. Thank you for your passion and your effort. It brought me so much joy." And then I wanted to share just one quick one, Kev and Christian from Apple. "Be still my Gen X heart. This podcast is so great. They go through the specials that I've watched all my life. So much of this podcast has me thinking, I thought it was just me. I badly want to hang out with these hosts and talk cartoons, breakfast cereals, and metal slides. Let's do a
meetup at Santa's Village.
Totally. In New Hampshire. Lake
Arrowhead. Well, I know the one in Lake Arrowhead out here, but New Hampshire would be great too. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
And she went on to say, keep it going. And once you add a Patreon, you can be sure I'll sign up.
Very, very appreciative.
Yeah, totally. Always fun to get the texts. And if you want a text, it's 351-251-2511. That number again is 351-251-2511.
Okay, you guys, well, keep in touch with us. I don't know when we'll be back. Could be in the fall. You never know. I don't know if there's any 4th of July stuff. I don't know
isn't there a terrible Rudolph and Frosty 4th of July?
There's a Christmas in July.
It's not good, but that doesn't stop.
Hasn't stopped us.
No, it hasn't. Okay, so we'll try to come back for that.
But and then it's August.
And then it's August, and we've got, yeah, like you said, I'm gonna
be putting up my Halloween decorations in August, so it's perfect.
Yeah. You guys, thank you, everybody. And what do we say?
We'll talk shortly.
Yeah, we'll talk.